Mitt Romney has won the Illinois Republican presidential primary, defeating rival Rick Santorum in the big state contest. Representative Derek Smith, Democrat of Chicago, has won the Democratic nomination for the Illinois House in the 10th District. Smith was charged with bribery last week after federal authorities claimed he accepted $7,000 in exchange for supporting what he thought was a daycare center's state grant application. This is Decision 2012, Illinois Public Media's live coverage of the 2012 primary election. I'm Craig Cohen. Tonight, we are bringing you the latest results and analysis from today's primary. This hour, we'll check in with more results from Jeff Bossert and Celeste Quinn at the Brookings Administrative Center, where Champaign County's results are being tallied. We'll also talk with our roundtable about some of the key issues lawmakers may face in the next term. First, a news update from NPR.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Speer. Mitt Romney has won the Republican primary in Illinois. With more than half of the votes counted, Romney leads his closest rival, Rick Santorum, by a substantial margin. Addressing supporters outside Chicago, Romney was turning his focus to President Obama.
This president doesn't understand the genius of America's economy or the secret of the American economic success story. The American economy is fueled by freedom.
As for Santorum, he'd already left the state and was back in Pennsylvania when Romney declared victory, though he remained defiant.
If you look at what's going to happen tonight, we're going to win downstate, we're going to win central Illinois, we're going to win western Illinois. We won the areas that conservatives and Republicans populate, and we're very happy about that. We're happy about the delegates we're going to get, too.
Neither Newt Gingrich or Ron Paul campaigned heavily in Illinois. A total of 54 delegates were up for grabs. Just the mission is on track there. As NPR's Larry Abramson reports, Allen told members recent incidents, like the shooting deaths of Afghan villagers, should not affect U.S. strategy.
Testifying before the House Armed Services Committee, General Allen said the alleged shooter in the village massacre, Staff Sergeant Robert Bales, is innocent until proven guilty. But Allen said little else about the case. He did tell lawmakers the military will be investigating decisions that led to Bales' posting to Kandahar Province.
It will look at the entire command and control process, how he was assigned, why he was assigned.
Bales served three previous tours in Iraq and was experiencing pressures at home. Bales has yet to be charged in the shooting. Larry Abramson, NPR News, Washington.
Worries of slowed growth in China, coupled with earnings concerns about heavy equipment maker Caterpillar, weighed on Wall Street today. Dow down 68 points to close at 13,170. The Nasdaq lost 4 points. The S&P 500 also fell 4 points today. You're listening to NPR. There are reports that government forces have now taken control of the eastern Syrian city of Deir ez-Zor following clashes with rebel fighters. According to anti-government activists, Syrian troops backed by tanks moved into the city, causing rebels to pull back amid fears of more civilian casualties. The year-old uprising against Syrian President Bashar al-Assad has already resulted in thousands of deaths. The U.S. Department of Commerce has ruled the Chinese government has unfairly subsidized its solar panel industry. NPR's Christopher Joyce reports the department is calling for tariffs on Chinese panels.
The ruling stems from a petition filed by several American solar panel makers. They claim that the Chinese government has subsidized its solar panel industry. They say the subsidies permit Chinese manufacturers to undercut prices charged by U.S. panel makers. The Commerce's International Trade Administration has instructed customs agents to levy tariffs on Chinese solar panels, ranging from 2.9 to 4.7% of their price. But a coalition of U.S. solar industries that mostly install solar panels opposes the ruling. They argue that Chinese solar panels have helped make solar energy more affordable in the U.S. They say cheaper panels create more jobs in solar installation than are lost by U.S. panel manufacturers. Christopher Joyce, NPR News.
What could be a new clue in one of the most enduring unsolved mysteries of the 20th century, namely what happened to missing aviatrix Amelia Earhart? Earhart and her navigator vanished 75 years ago while flying over the Pacific. Now investigators say analysis of a photo taken just months after her plane vanished shows what experts think may be the plane's landing gear protruding from the waters off a remote island in the Pacific. A search is expected in July. I'm Jack Speer, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from Sit for Less, selling all colors of the Herman Miller Aeron Chair online, including Sit for Less True Black, online at sitforless.com.
This is Decision 2012, special coverage of the 2012 Illinois primary from Illinois Public Media. I'm Craig Cohen. Mitt Romney has won the Illinois Republican presidential primary, defeating Rick Santorum and Ron Paul and Newt Gingrich fairly handily. Romney, with 61% of votes in, received 48% of the votes. Rick Santorum, about 34.75%. Ron Paul, about 9%. Newt Gingrich, just under 8%. Again, that's with 61% of precincts reporting. Representative Derek Smith, a Democrat from Chicago, has won the Democratic nomination for the Illinois House in the 10th District. Smith was the representative charged with bribery last week after federal authorities claimed he accepted $7,000 in exchange for supporting what he thought was a daycare center's state grant application. In the 51st Senate seat, 44% of precincts reporting, Chapin Rose is currently leading Tom Plura by a sizable margin, 62.5% to 37.5%. In the 53rd Senate seat, with 26% of precincts reporting, Jason Barrickman owns a 2-1 lead over Shane Coulter, 66% to 33%. There are some other races with some details starting to trickle in, but not really a sizable percentage of precincts reporting just yet, so we're going to hold off on any details about some of the House races and ballot referenda and some other items, but we will keep you posted, and as soon as we have some pretty sizable details to share with you, we'll pass them along. For the latest results, of course, you can check out our election page at will.illinois.edu/election. That's will.illinois.edu/election. We'd also love to hear from you via Twitter or Facebook. Our Twitter handle is Will Public Media. You can find us on Facebook at Will Radio TV Online. All evening long, I've been joined in studio by Dr. Robert Rich, director of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois. Also with us is political science professors Kent Redfield from the University of Illinois at Springfield and John Jackson from SIU Carbondale. Gentlemen, let's talk a little bit about some of the issues that Illinois lawmakers may be dealing with in the coming year. And let me start with you, Bob. What are some of those issues?
I think the big three issues for Illinois lawmakers are, number one, the structural deficit in Illinois, meaning we have more recurring expenses than we have recurring revenues. Mm-hmm. And number two is pensions, the need for pension reform, because we're spending an enormous amount on pensions. As a matter of fact, we are 50th out of 50 states in terms of unfunded pension liability and Medicaid. And the need for getting Medicaid spending under control. So I think that those are the major issues in front of the legislature.
Kent, would you agree with that?
Certainly. Those are the ones that are going to make the difference. They get expressed in some different ways. Facility closings are a huge issue downstate, which is a budget issue in that we know we need to cut spending. We know we probably need more revenue, although no one's willing to talk about that at this point. But when it comes to cutting a facility in my district, then that becomes more of a problem. It's part of the old saying, everybody wants to go to heaven, but nobody wants to die. And that's really the problem when we get to cutting budgets. So Bob has correctly said, these are the things that drive, that determine whether we're going to get on an upward or a downward curve in terms of trying to deal with the overall problems in the Illinois budget.
And what do you think, John Jackson? Do you agree with the notion that pension, Medicaid, the deficit, those facility closings, these budgetary matters are sort of the key issues that Illinois lawmakers really have to face up to?
Yes, I think that's exactly the right list. I think the challenge is a political one, and that is, can the General Assembly find a way to compromise and work across the aisle and get any kind of bipartisan addressing of these very difficult issues? There is hope in the sense that there was a decent education deal worked out last year, and at least the start of some solutions on workman's comp, so they may take that as a template, but it could all be very, very difficult.
Bob, in many ways, this is what Congress is facing. I mean, and what we've been hearing about for the last year and a half, we're spending more than we are taking in. And isn't there sort of a snowball effect that when the federal government continues to operate like that and punts certain things to the states and then states punt to the local governments, eventually somebody gets squeezed?
I think that's right. And I think that nationally, if you ask us the big issues nationally. Certainly, budget deficit is an issue. Joblessness is an issue. Promoting job growth and economic growth. I think that economic growth, economic development is also a major issue in Illinois. And there's no doubt that the overall national economy affects our state as well.
Kent, who is feeling the biggest squeeze economically in Illinois?
Well, I think that extends to all levels. There certainly is a squeeze in terms of employers. The unemployment numbers are certainly there. We have long-term, hardcore unemployment numbers above what the national average are. When we put pressure on state government, puts pressure on local government, then we have fewer policemen and firemen, and that puts pressure on local economies. If we close a prison, that puts pressure on local economies. And so there's an interconnectedness and a trickle down here that involves both private and public sector that makes it all the more difficult to start to get ahead of the economic problems that we have. We tend to be slower getting out of economic downturns than the national average historically, and that seems to be the case this time around.
John, at the national level, in the current political environment, where any hint of a suggestion of a tax increase is met by both of the major parties as sort of a non-starter, and neither party can seem to agree on what should or shouldn't be cut from the budget, just how are we ever going to address the debt we've amassed?
Well, there is, of course, the president's plan to tax those with $250,000 and above income, and I think that will be revisited. But I think more importantly, both sides have suggested restructuring the whole tax system, getting rid of a lot of the loopholes and lowering the tax rates on particularly business, and I think that will be the conversation. Probably won't take place until after the November election, but it'll be a part of the context that will be discussed during the election as well.
And then, Bob, at the state level, Illinois, it seems, has avoided some of the gridlock that you see in Washington. To what do you attribute that?
Well, I'm not sure I agree with you, Craig.
Okay.
I think that what's really interesting about Illinois is that we still have major differences between the governor and the legislature, and even between the two houses of the legislature, as well. For example, last year we didn't get the big pension reform bill, and we didn't get the big pension reform bill not only because the unions were opposed to it, but also because the legislature and the governor couldn't agree on a plan. So I think we have the odd situation in Illinois, even though we are a very quote-unquote blue state, the governor and the speaker and the president and the Senate don't always work well together.
That said, though, I mean, Illinois was able to pass some tax measures the last couple of years. There have been opportunities to raise revenues. In comparison to the sort of almost frozen nature of things in Congress, Illinois seems fairly movable.
That's right, although I would say to you that one of the unintended or maybe even intended consequences of being such a blue state is that we're not building coalitions across party lines. And therefore, when you need to have a supermajority, as you do for revenue-raising measures and other measures, they're very difficult to get as well. And I think when we get to this pension issue and the Medicaid issue, we're going to need to have bipartisan support, and I think that that's going to be difficult.
Kent, would you agree that there could be room for more aisle crossing in Springfield?
Certainly. This was the first tax increase in my memory where there was not a bipartisan deal and a manufactured roll call where both sides put votes on the aisle. This was passed with strictly Democratic votes. And so that is one way to do business. But I don't think you do pensions, which without a bipartisan agreement. I'm not sure you do Medicaid without some help at the national level. I mean, pensions is a problem that we have our own particular version of. The health care issues are national. Now, certainly, when you get past the primary, it becomes a different legislature. Charlie Wheeler, who writes for Illinois Issues, said an interesting article. There are 35 members of the Senate who, having gotten through tonight, will have no opposition in the fall. There are 81 members of the House, having gotten through tonight, will have no opposition in the fall. So, 21 Democrats and 14 Republicans in the Senate and about 45 Democrats and 36 Republicans in the House don't have to worry about facing the voters in the fall, because they'll be the only, they'll be the only person on the ballot. So we may get some stuff done now that we couldn't get done earlier. And veto sessions are often very productive in Illinois. Witness what we did after the 2010 election. So these are really, really difficult problems, but there are some, there will be opportunities now and after the veto session, although, again, a little more across the aisle would go a long way, and we certainly haven't seen that. We saw it in education. We saw it in workers' comp. There are some templates there, not in the tax increase.
John Jackson, do you think the latest redistricting will affect the political makeup of the legislature in such a way that we could see more aisle crossing?
Well, it's possible. It was designed, of course, to protect the Democrats and protect the incumbents to a lesser degree, but it's possible that after they reshake all of this, they'll step back and say, look, we've got to do something about these grinding problems, and there's evidence on both sides. I'm a little more optimistic in the sense that I think once the election smoke settles, they're going to have to get serious, and I think there is the possibility for some bipartisan approaches. John Cullerton, the Senate president, just introduced a pension reform possibility, and I think that conversation will have to take place.
Bob Rich, former President Clinton has always been fond of saying, we campaign in poetry and govern in prose. As we've been following the election, primary election process, do you think we still campaign in poetry?
Well, if the evidence is this primary election campaign, the answer is no. I mean, it would be bad poetry.
Well, maybe
or mean poetry.
Maybe angry haiku at the very least.
I think this has been a very negative primary process, and unfortunately, I suspect that the overall general campaign is going to be very negative as well. I think it's going to be very nasty as well. So I think President Clinton's adage may not hold true even in the general election.
Kent, has the nastiness of recent election cycles scuttled anyone's efforts to offer soaring rhetoric?
Well, no, I think that's one of the amazing things, is that you still do get people who are admirable and that are articulate and can express positions in ways that inspire people on both sides. I think that is that certainly is still there. It is when the campaigns get ground up by the consultants, and it's hard to have a lot of values and soaring ideas in a 15-second robocall, and so the way that we campaign certainly detracts from that. But I think there certainly are quality leaders and quality spokesmen for these issues. But it's getting harder and harder for them to find an audience. That's really the polarization of the rhetoric and the media. And the coarsening of the debate are all things that we need to turn around. I'm short on good suggestions this evening, unfortunately.
And finally, John Jackson, the second half of President Clinton's statement bears some consideration. Who among the many candidates we've discussed tonight may be best able to govern in prose or legislate in prose, as the case may be?
Well, I think that's the very important consideration of people having experience and having a record. I think the president demonstrates that he can be president and be successful. You can argue about how successful, and that's what the campaign will be all about. Mitt Romney has governed a large state and I think arguably was successful at that. They have to talk about the nuts and bolts, and they have to have a record that they can defend, and I think they'll be able to defend their record and their vision for the future. If one of them does that better than the other, that one's likely to win in November.
Bob Rich, Kent Redfield, John Jackson, we'll have to leave it there for now. And we want to head out to the Brookings Municipal Building and join Celeste Quinn and Jeff Bossert. They're both out there. And Celeste, welcome to the program. What's the latest from Brookings?
Well, this is Jeff.
I'm sorry, Jeff. Go ahead.
All right. Well, I just wanted to run through some of the things that we are seeing here that are a little interesting. Excuse me while I turn down my headphone level so I don't echo back on myself. But one thing of note, we're looking at local races first, is that the fact that Rick Winkle, who had dropped out of the race, actually, for Champaign County Circuit Clerk, is pretty close to his competitor in that race.
Really?
It's very even right now, 59% to 51%. Stephanie Holderfield was, you know, it was to be running by herself, and you know, Winkle, as we mentioned, had dropped out to take a job at the U of I's with the Institute of Government and Public Affairs, and was going to be heading up a new position there. 50% right now for Holderfield, who's officially the only person in that race, but Rick Winkle, 49%. Looking at some of the county board races, right now, County Board District 7, Todd Satterthwaite, the former mayor of Urbana, was making a bid for that office. Right now, and we don't have a great deal of precincts in yet, we're about 32 of 118 precincts, but right now, Satterthwaite trails Alan Kurtz, the incumbent, and political newcomer Rachel Schwartz. Kurtz with 36%, Schwartz with 40%, and Todd Satterthwaite, again, the former Urbana mayor, with 23% of the vote. County Board District 11, Brent West trailing with only six of precincts in. Brent West, another newcomer, trailing Lorraine Colbert and Lloyd Carter. That's in District 11. In the race for Champaign County Circuit Clerk, right now, Barb Wysocki, with 32 precincts in, has a slight edge over Lori Hansen and Evelyn Underwood, 32 precincts in. And in the race for Champaign County Auditor, George Danos with 45%, Kevin Sandifer 35%, and Ben Carlson has just under 19% of the vote. A couple of state legislative races in the Champaign County portion of those numbers. Chapin Rose with a large lead with seven precincts in, 69% to 30% over Tom Plura. And in the 102nd State Representative District, Anna Brown, a commanding 80% to 19% lead over Rob Roman.
It sounds like...
Moving on to larger offices.
Go ahead, Jeff.
The 13th Congressional District, David Gill, 76% to Matt Gettins, 23%, with 26 of 83 precincts counted. And also, it was around larger races right now. Mitt Romney, just for the Champaign County portion of the vote, appears to have won Champaign County as well as the state, 41% of the vote. Rick Santorum, 33%, and Ron Paul, despite that visit to the U of I campus last week, 13% of the vote, and Newt Gingrich, 10%. One other local race, it appears the electric aggregation referendum will pass in both in Champaign and Urbana. There's a 72 to 27% lead in Urbana, and in Champaign, 66 to 33%.
Jeff, it sounds like the local races for auditor, circuit clerk, Champaign County Board that you were just reporting are awfully close. I mean,
that's correct. Yeah, and that most interesting thing going on right now is to find out how those things come out. But you mentioned Barb Wysocki with that, a former Champaign County Board member trying to get back into elected office. We hope to find her here later tonight in a couple of tight county board races as well.
And again, it sounds like you're saying the referenda for electric aggregation will pass in both Champaign and Urbana. Could you remind folks the distinction between what those referenda are saying?
Yes. If you vote yes on this, that means that you are authorizing Champaign and Urbana to negotiate for a better portion of the supply, a better price in the supply portion of your electric bill. And you'll still get your bill from Ameren, unless, of course, you've chosen one of the other alternate suppliers that is many people are getting flooded with in the mail right now. But this is to authorize Champaign and Urbana to negotiate for a lower price, and this will happen sometime, I believe, later this summer. And in many other communities, something like 300 communities also have this on the ballots in this primary, and about 20 have already voted to pass it. And advocates, or even organizations like the Citizens Utility Board, who aren't taking a position on it, say that consumers are saving, and citizens and small businesses are saving on their electric bills.
So how much more information do you need about the presidential race, 13th Congressional District, and some of the races within Champaign County? How many more ballots are you waiting on?
Oh, we've got a ways to go. We're looking right now with, as I just mentioned, Gill and Getten, 26 of 83 precincts in. I think we might be just getting some new updated numbers. A short while ago, Gordy Holton made his way through here saying things are steadily coming in. So I would hope for an early finish tonight, unlike we might see in a fall election. But yeah, we've got, and as far as the presidential race, 32 of 118 precincts counted in the numbers we're reporting now. So a little ways to go as far as the totals there.
The last time I was there at Brookings for these kinds of results was 1996. So I'm curious if the atmosphere is any different from what I remember. I remember a lot of reporters huddled around one printout pouring through data.
Oh, gosh. No, now it's, you have to maybe work out to have the right expertise. You have to be cunning to fight your way through the crowd of reporters as staff on the Gordy Holton staff will run out with a bunch of sheets and everybody runs to grab them. But being a primary and not having a lot of final results and yet the mad dash isn't quite so serious at this point.
That's Jeff Bosser checking in from Brookings. Jeff, thanks very much. And, of course, we'll check back with you as we have more details. Thanks very much. Just again to summarize some of the results that we've had so far tonight, of course, Mitt Romney has won the Illinois Republican presidential primary, defeating Rick Santorum. At this point, with 74% of precincts reporting, Mitt Romney owns a 48% to just under 35% lead over Rick Santorum. Ron Paul garnering just over 9% of the vote. Newt Gingrich just under 8%. Of course, we heard some of the details of what's coming in from Champaign County. We don't have significant details beyond what Jeff just reported for the 13th Congressional District. And, of course, we're keeping an eye on some of the other Senate and House races, as he just reported. And it sounds like we're going to have some pretty close races going into the night for Circuit Clerk, for the Champaign County Board, and for Auditor. We'll keep you posted on those as well. You're listening to Decision 2012, live election coverage from Illinois Public Media, WILL, and online at WILL.illinois.edu.
Good evening. This is primary election coverage from Illinois Public Radio. I'm Sean Crawford, along with Professor Kent Redfield from the University of Illinois Springfield. In an update tonight, Mitt Romney has been declared the winner of the Illinois presidential primary on the Republican side with 47% of the vote, Romney defeating Rick Santorum, 35% there. Ron Paul came in third with 9% and Newt Gingrich, 8% of the vote. And, Kent, we're seeing some returns now coming in on these congressional races. In fact, one of the congressional races we had been watching, which was up in the South Chicago suburbs, the 2nd House District, and now having been called in favor of Jesse Jackson Jr., overwhelmingly winning there, 71% to 29% over Debbie Halverson, the former congresswoman,
and that's with about 83% of the vote in. A surprise to hear Jesse Jackson win that. I think that it appeared as though he had a pretty strong organization working for him.
Yeah, no, this is not a surprise. He had a large portion of his district, you know, the old district was in this. Halverson got in the race because what they added to his district was territory she represented before she lost to Kutzinger 2 years ago. But it was always an uphill battle. The question was just whether or not the baggage of Jesse Jackson would be enough of a drag to make it competitive, and the answer tonight seems to be no.
Another one of those races we're watching, the House District, the 16th House District. You mentioned Adam Kinzinger there, the Republican, due to redistricting, running in the same district as another sitting congressman, Don Manzullo, another Republican. And with 66% of the vote in, Kinzinger with 55% to 45% for Manzullo. That is a race that's been very nasty, very heated throughout the last couple of months. But Kinzinger may be able to hold on there, about a 5,000 vote lead.
Yeah, that looks like that's the case. And it also is an example of the map, the Democrats working the way that they want it to work, which is that we have two incumbent Republicans running against each other in a district that's overwhelmingly Republican. And by creating that district, then they create opportunities for the Democrats other places, particularly in the suburbs. And so it's important to the two candidates, but it has no impact on either who controls the Illinois delegation or who controls Congress.
And remember, due to the redistricting brought with it only 18 congressional districts, down from 19, so Illinois losing a seat in Congress. That wasn't so much of a surprise. I think maybe what was a surprise was that Jerry Costello, longtime Democratic congressman, decided to retire. That created an open district, the 12th House District in the Metro East area of St. Louis. And right now on the Republican side, a little over half the votes counted there. On the Republican side, Jason Plummer, 61% of the vote, former Lieutenant Governor candidate, defeating Roger Cook right now with 31%. So Plummer way ahead there. And on the Democratic side, Brad Harriman comfortably ahead. So it looks as though Plummer and Harriman could very well meet up in November.
Yes, and Jason Plummer was the Republican candidate for lieutenant governor. There's a lot of self-funding there, and that's a seat the Democrats didn't think they would have to defend. So there are four districts in Illinois where the Democrats believe they could pick up seats from Republicans, but now there's also a possibility they would lose a seat formerly held by a Democrat. So Illinois turns out to be a major battleground in the control of Congress, because the map puts four incumbent Republicans at risk, but now we've got a district that has elected a very conservative Democrat that's now an open seat, and not clear at all how that's going to sort out in the fall. Probably still leans Democratic, but certainly money the Democrats didn't expect to have to be spending.
In the 8th House District, now official, the Associated Press calling that Democratic primary for Tammy Duckworth. She had about 65% of the vote. Roger Krishnamoorthy with 35%. Turnout varied around the state today. In some areas, possibly historically low. Chicago saying this might be the lowest ever when it comes to turnout for a presidential primary. Some other areas, especially more heavily Republican areas, probably buoyed somewhat by the presidential race, reporting turnout as high as 40%. More updates to come. This is Illinois Public Radio.
This is Decision 2012, live election coverage from Illinois Public Media, WILL. And I'm Craig Cohen, glad to have you with us as we are keeping track of the results and offering analysis of tonight's primary election. With me here in the studio is Bob Rich, Director of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois. At the end of that Illinois Public Radio report from Sean Crawford, we heard that voter turnout in Chicago is maybe at a historic low. Does that surprise you?
Not particularly, and the reason why it doesn't particularly surprise me is because Chicago is very Democratic in terms of party affiliation, and there weren't that many interesting races in Chicago per se, whereas the Public Radio report also said that there were some historic highs in traditionally Republican suburban areas, which I think is good news for the Republican presidential candidates. There may have been more enthusiasm there, along with some of the contested state races. I mean, I think if we had a Democratic primary, we'd have gotten a much higher turnout in Chicago.
Do you think presidential candidates, once a Republican nominee is determined, whoever that nominee may be, whether it's Mitt Romney or someone else, is generally unconcerned about the city of Chicago, or is there something specifically that they're seeking from a major metropolitan area that might skew to the left historically? Are they trying to just move the needle a little bit, or are they focus on the suburbs, or how do you approach that?
Well, I think they focus on the suburbs, both the closer-in suburbs and especially the suburbs that are somewhat further out. But with respect to the urban areas themselves, I suspect that in this election, the Republican candidate, whoever he is going to try to move the needle somewhat. And they're going to try to move the needle somewhat on the issues of jobs and the economy.
Can we look at what happens in Chicago and automatically assume or glean from that, as goes Chicago, so goes Illinois?
No, I don't think so. I think there are many ways three Illinois. There is Chicago, there's the so-called Cower counties, and then there is downstate Illinois. And in many ways, they are, from a political standpoint, they're three separate states with three different sets of political preferences and values. What's happened, as we talked about earlier, is that there's been a loss of population in downstate Illinois, and so the suburbs have gained even more importance.
We'll continue to talk about this, and we'll bring in the rest of our panel in just a little while. But at this point, I want to check in with Illinois Public Radio's Charlie Schlenker. He's on the line with us from the Doubletree Hotel in Bloomington, and he's there reporting on the 53rd Senate race between Jason Barrickman and Shane Cultra. Charlie, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you with us. What can you tell us about what's happening in that race between Jason Barrickman and Shane Cultra?
The early numbers look pretty good for Barrickman, although there's still a lot of the vote yet to come in. As you would expect, with Barrickman having ties to Livingston County and to McLean County, he's expecting to run very strong in the west end of the district, and Cultra is banking on big margins in his old House seat, which is on the east end of the district. It remains to be seen which one is going to balance out to the negative. Barrickman is chipper and cheery so far, and he's buoyed by the numbers. He's also been perhaps the more disciplined of the two candidates. You would expect Cultura would be, since he's had more experience, but he really hasn't faced a challenge over the last 6-8 years, and so he's been a little rusty. As witness to that, one of his statements was perhaps not the best for a Republican audience. Cultura indicated that he would at least consider taxing retirement income. He said this at a Republican women's candidates forum, and of course there was a big murmur that went up all around, and that didn't go over too well. He committed the sin of either being too honest or perhaps the sin of thinking out loud as a way to get to a solution on the state pension problem.
You don't typically hear the phrase "consider taxing" during any election campaign.
By a Republican, right?
By a Republican, but even these days, by Democrats, it would seem.
All right, it's one of those third rails that will get you lost votes.
What have been the major issues that these two Republicans have been discussing over the course of their campaign?
They're both trying to out-conservative the other. They're both pro-life. They're both pro-gun. They're both talking about the need to cut Medicaid eligibility as a way to stop bankrupting the state. They're both talking about spending cuts as a way to change the hard equations for the pension system in the state. They're both bashing Governor Quinn. But the question of the race is turning on who is entitled to the seat. A lot of Republicans still have a core value of wait your turn. Experience matters. let the guy whose time it is have the seat, and your time will come later. Berkman, by campaigning for the Senate seat when Dan Rutherford left to become treasurer and then taking the House seat and turning right around and running for Senate, ticked off a fair number of party establishment folks, even in his backyard. And that may hurt him eventually, but his comeback to that is that, you know, you don't have to accept being in the minority. You can still be energetic and legislate and try and make a difference. And he's trying to make the point that his energy and youth will do that.
I mentioned you're at a hotel in Bloomington. I imagine you're following one or both of the campaigns tonight.
I have been around to several different places and will be again. I won't make it all the way to Onarga, where Senator Cultra is holding court in his hometown, but we are following the race. You bet.
All right. Charlie, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
All right. That's Illinois Public Radio's Charlie Schlenker from Bloomington telling us about some of the latest information on the 53rd Senate race, Illinois State Senate race between Jason Berkman and Shane Coulter, two Republicans vying for the GOP nomination. I think the phrase that really stuck out, Bob Rich, was that these two candidates were trying to out-conservative one another. We've seen a lot of that at a lot of levels of government during, and I guess we routinely do, from either party during election seasons.
I think this has been particularly true of the Republican Party for the last two national elections and also in the 2010 election as well. What I think is interesting in both parties, the elections seem to be more about the extremes than they do about the moderate middle ground. And yet any political scientist would tell you that it's the moderates and independents who help you win elections. And so what makes things so strange is that what you need to do to win your party's nomination is not necessarily the same thing at all that you need to do to win a election.
Is this why, taking this characterization to the presidential campaign, why someone like President Obama, as the incumbent, not facing a challenge, can sort of sit back and just let the GOP candidates, quote unquote, duke it out, and that that's a favorable position to be?
Up to a point. I think that from a strategy point of view, President Obama's had to make a decision of when he's going to officially really launch his campaign in a big way. And I think he decided that with Vice President Biden being out this past week and really campaigning rather vigorously. I think that President Obama understands that with all the attacks on the economy and with the gas prices and the like, that he doesn't want to get have some wounds inflicted that he can't recover from.
So based off of the results you've heard so far, what so far is intriguing you about tonight?
I guess what intrigues me about tonight is I think that the margin of victory in the presidential campaign is perhaps a bit wider than I might have expected. That's intriguing and then I think I'm intrigued by the, although expected, the Jesse Jackson Halverson race. I think that's been interesting, and I suspect those are the two things that have intrigued me the most.
I've got some details to report on the U.S. House 13th District Democratic primary between Matthew Getten and David Gill. This is with about 58% of the 612 precincts reporting. We have Matthew Getten leading David Gill 52% to 48%, a relatively close race. On the GOP side, of course, Tim Johnson facing a challenge from Frank Metzger and Michael Fershing, and handily winning at this point with 58% of the precincts reporting. Tim Johnson owns 66% lead, or I should say he has 66% of the vote. Frank Metzger has 20%. Michael Fershing with 14%. So it looks like Tim Johnson may be on his way to the nomination and a chance to win re-election in this newly formed 13th Congressional District. While at the same time, it looks like it's unclear at this point whether he will be facing Matthew Gettin or David Gill.
Right. And I think that ultimately the result of the Democratic side is going to be very, very interesting, because I think it will tell us something about what the shape of the fall general election campaign is going to be. And I think it will be influential in terms of how much the both state Democratic Party and the National Democratic Party pay, how much attention they pay to this particular race.
Let's talk for a second about the GOP presidential race, just in terms of whether you think, and we talked a little bit about this a couple hours ago as it was becoming clear that Mitt Romney had won Illinois. Do you think this is sort of the galvanizing moment for his campaign and his nomination, winning Illinois and winning a significant portion of the Illinois delegates? Is this the point at which he can sort of turn the corner and say, all right, the delegate count, the math, all that aside, I seem to be winning a lot more than anybody else?
Well, I think that I'll be interested in seeing how many delegates he ultimately wins here. I must say that when the margin was a 20% margin, I think he could have made that case more convincingly than he can when it's a 12% margin. Now, that's not to say that a 12% margin still isn't a convincing victory, but I think both in terms of Senator Santorum and Speaker Gingrich, they're going to interpret a 12% margin as, well, that's a victory for him, and congratulations for the victory, but let's see what happens in the other races. From a standpoint of the strategy of the Romney campaign, I think that he will use this to help him with the very, as we noted before, with the very favorable geography that's going to occur in April and early May.
At this point, I want to see if we can, you know what, I don't know if we're going to be able to. Can we bring back in Kent Redfield and also John Jackson? Let's bring the two of them back into this discussion. Chat for a few more minutes, and then I also have an update coming in from Brian Mackey from Illinois Public Radio, but we'll get to that in a few minutes. We've been talking here in the studio, gentlemen, about whether or not Mitt Romney has sort of turned a corner tonight, and I was wondering what your thoughts were. Kent?
I think they're certainly going to spin it that way, and I think that there's probably some truth to that. And it's going to play out in terms of money. Romney has more money than he knows what to do with. That's a little bit of an exaggeration. But Santorum's campaign has been run on a shoestring. Gingrich has one particularly large patron. And at some point, smart money is going to want to be with the eventual winner. So I think that's going to have an impact. There are going to be fewer resources available to Romney and or to Santorum and Gingrich, which is going to help Romney in terms of the inevitability and the math. On the other hand, I don't expect Santorum and Gingrich to go away, partially because of the fact I don't think either one of them thought they would still be working this time of year, and they are. And so it's not clear they have somewhere else to go. So I think they're going to play it out a little longer. But I think this really does set Romney up to at least close the deal from the numbers standpoint. But he may still have a long way to go with the hearts and minds of the core group that's supporting Santorum.
John Jackson?
I think Illinois will prove to be a pivotal primary. I think it's by the luck of the draw, and we certainly didn't plan it that way, but this will be an important victory for Romney. I think, more interestingly, it's been a very bad week or 10 days for Santorum. I think, the Tribune poll came out about 10 days ago, and it was 34 for Romney, 31 for Santorum, and within the margin of error, and I think that was about right then, and it's not going to be that tonight, and he's just had some bad outings and some things that happened to make his campaign look very shaky over the last week or 10 days.
I think, Craig, that if Senator Santorum were to lose his own home state of Pennsylvania, that might be the death knell for his campaign. It might be at that point that his supporters and the elders of the party say, time to back off. And I think that we'll see. I mean, I take it that he's going to do well in Louisiana on Saturday. But after that, as I said, I think the geography favors Romney. And I think that we may move up to that Pennsylvania primary and see what happens there.
Gentlemen, I'll ask you to stand by for just a couple of minutes. I want to check in now with Illinois Public Radio's Brian Mackey. Brian, can you tell us about some of the congressional races that you've been tracking tonight?
Sure. The biggest one we're watching is the 16th Congressional District. This starts up at the Wisconsin border, goes south through Rockford, down to Pontiac, and then juts to the east over to the Indiana border between Champaign and Kankakee, but not including either of those. This has two Republican incumbents who were drawn together in the new map. So Adam Kinzinger is going up against Don Manzullo. There's been a lot of controversy in this race because a member of the Republican House leadership got involved and spent a little bit of money helping Adam Kinzinger, and that really irritated Don Manzullo, who's been a longtime representative. But as of a few minutes ago, with 81% reporting, Kinzinger is up 55% to Manzullo's 45%. And so that's probably the biggest race we're keeping an eye on tonight. Elsewhere in the state, up in Chicago, Jesse Jackson Jr. Won handily against Debbie Halverson. It was said to be the tightest race he's had since he was first elected to Congress. He's had a very safe district most of his time there. But Debbie Halverson was a former congresswoman. She had only been in for a short time, and she was defeated in the big sweep of Democrats a few years ago, or I should say Republican sweep that ousted a lot of Democrats. But Jesse Jackson Jr. won handily with 71% of the vote. Locally in Champaign, I know we're keeping an eye on the David Gill-Matthew Getten primary. David Gill is running for a Democratic primary, I should say. David Gill is a doctor. Matthew Getten is the Greene County State's attorney. As of just a few minutes ago, with 59% of the district's reporting, it was too close to call, but Matt Getten was up 52% to David Gill's 48%.
Yep, that's exactly what we've been tracking. It sounds like the last percentage of precincts have just reported in haven't really changed the math much there. It really is close, isn't it?
It is a very close, and of course this is a new district. Tim Johnson has been an incumbent in that area for a long time, but now the district encompasses part of Bloomington and Springfield and Decatur, and it runs all the way over to the Mississippi River in western Illinois between Quincy and St. Louis. So it'll be interesting to see how that develops.
And Brian, we've just been talking about that race, and I should point out that the Associated Press has officially reported that Tim Johnson has won his nomination. That wasn't a great surprise, and he's taken a sizable percentage of the vote.
Yeah, it's 68%
today.
Last I saw there.
Yeah. So would you say of all the districts you're looking at, maybe the 13th on the Democratic side might be among the most interesting results to track through the rest of the night?
Yeah, on the Democratic side, that certainly could be the case, yeah.
Any surprises, anything that's really leapt out in your eyes as you've been tracking some of these congressional results?
No, and of course, I mean, nothing too terribly surprising yet. I think people expected that Jesse Jackson Jr. might have had a little bit more of a race, at least early on in this process. As we've gotten closer, the polling has indicated he'd do well. And then, as I mentioned at the beginning, Kinzinger and Manzullo, two Republicans fighting each other, there have been a lot of eyes on that. But it's worth noting that out of the there are 18 districts in Illinois, 18 incumbents running, and 10 of those incumbents were running unopposed. So, as usual, the map plays a big part in just keeping people not even trying to oust people in Illinois.
Illinois Public Radio's Brian Mackey. Brian, thanks so much.
All right, you're welcome.
And let's bring back in Kent Redfield, professor of political science at the University of Illinois at Springfield, and John Jackson, professor of political science at SIU Carbondale. Also with us is Bob Rich, director of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the U of I. And Kent, we're down to our final minutes of our continuous broadcast. Or are we going to continue past 10 o'clock? We are. Okay. Just got that word. I'm curious what of everything you've heard has intrigued you most about the results tonight so far.
I think the where you've got two incumbents running against each other, I think that's all that's fascinating, and those really get to be blood sports, even though, you know, the 16th will be represented by congressional, be represented by Republican, regardless of whether it's Manzullo or Kutzinger. The map does set up a general election contest. Probably four of the top 20 targets for the Democrats are Republican incumbents in Illinois, and I think one of the top 20 or 25 targets for Republicans are in Illinois, Costello down in the 12th. I guess the one race that really intrigues me, if the numbers I see are correct, is that in the 10th House District, Derek Smith has been nominated for the Democratic seat in the House. He's an incumbent Democrat who last week was indicted for taking a bribe. And if he does not, if they don't convince him to get off the ballot, then he would win in the fall. It's an overwhelmingly Democratic district. And I often joke that the standard of ethics in Illinois is political ethics is not currently under indictment, but we may have just lowered that standard a little bit with Representative Smith's victory tonight. So never a dull moment in Illinois politics.
John Jackson, what's interested you most tonight?
I think the size of the Romney victory. I alluded to Michigan and Ohio earlier. Those were both very close. They're comparable Midwestern states, and this one wasn't really that close tonight.
And as we're closing in on the end of the hour, I'm curious if there's anything thus far that we've missed, Bob, that we should really be talking over at this moment.
No, I don't think so. I think we've covered it pretty well.
All right. Well, let me ask you this. You mentioned earlier that some of the, you know, congressional lawmakers, some of the candidates, some of what they may be looking at in terms of issues beyond the economic issues that everybody's sort of focused on, maybe foreign affairs. What about state lawmakers? Should they pay attention to foreign affairs? Should they be well-versed?
Well, I don't know. We might like them to be well-versed, but it's not something they should be paying particularly attention to, and not something I think that we should be judging them on in terms of their electability.
Well, I mean, what happens halfway around the world can have an impact here, though, right?
It can have an impact, and it can have an impact on our competitiveness as a state and on our economy.
All right, so then what issues should state lawmakers be looking at now, between now and Election Day, and which of those, this is something I'm really curious about, which of those that will garner a lot of attention will suddenly disappear when they take office?
I actually think that none of the ones that we talked about here today are going to disappear when they take office. I mean, I think that it took us a long time to develop the structural deficit we have. It's going to take us a long time to solve it, and we can make progress on pensions and Medicaid, but they're not going to go away with the election.
All right. Any final thoughts, Kent Redfield?
Assuming that we still have a Democratic legislature and a Democratic governor, there's going to be a lot of discussion about concealed carry, a lot of discussion about right to life, and those issues are probably not going to be anything that's going to make the governor's desk in the 2013-2014 session of the General Assembly. So those are a couple of issues that people are running on that are probably not going to be very high at the list of things that actually get passed in the legislature.
John Jackson, final thoughts.
Closing public facilities, particularly TAMS, maximum security prison in this end of the state, is huge, and something about that will not go away. It's may not going to be the list that Quinn advanced, but it'll be around.
Bob Rich is director of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois. Bob, thanks for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Kent Redfield is professor of political science at the University of Illinois at Springfield. Kent, thank you.
Super, thank you.
And John Jackson is professor of political science at SIU Carbondale. John, thank you very much.
I enjoyed it.
Well, we're closing in on the end of our wall-to-wall live coverage, but we will share updates throughout the night as appropriate and have more results and analysis on Morning Edition tomorrow morning from 5 to 9. We'll also have the latest info all the time at will.illinois.edu/election. Tonight's broadcast was produced by Sean Powers with assistance from Kimberly Cronick, Celeste Quinn, Jeff Bossert, Pam Dempsey, Jill Dices, Azra Halilovich, Mary Barano, Jack Brighton, and Dan Davis. Additional reporting from Illinois Public Radio's Charlie Schlenker and Brian Mackey. Our technical director is Jason Croft. I'm Craig Cohen. This is Illinois Public Media, WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM, HD3 Urbana. Want to just quickly run over again some of the results that we have from tonight. Mitt Romney, again, winning the GOP presidential primary with looks like 87% of the precincts in at this point. He had 47% of the vote to Rick Santorum's 35%. Ron Paul just under 10%. Newt Gingrich with about 8%. Tim Johnson winning his GOP nomination in the 13th Congressional District. Still too close to call between Matt Gettin and David Gill. It's a minute past 10.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Shea Stevens. Mitt Romney has won the Republican presidential primary in Illinois by a wide margin.